I'm holding in my hand a very handsome book. It's the work of my next guest, Ian Golden. He's the Oxford University Professor of Globalisation and Development, and he was an advisor to Nelson Mandela, also Vice President of the World Bank. The book that I'm holding is a work that he co-authored. It looks at the challenges facing humanity using maps and analysis to discuss the issues and how we confront them. It's called Terra Incognita, 100 Maps to Survive the Next 100 Years. Ian Golden co-authored it with Robert McGarr. Ian Golden, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, you're obviously at the other side of the world and back in lockdown. What's it like in the UK right now?
It's tough. You know, I was listening with great envy at you having less than a handful of cases in Victoria. We have something like 55,000 yesterday, new cases, and things are very tough. Numbers are rising rapidly, and we've just entered, the Prime Minister just announced that we're entering the third of the severe lockdowns, so schools, everything closing.
Do you think that will work?
It certainly has worked previously. It's brought the numbers back, but there's so much endemic in the community that we're not going to get anywhere near Australia. I think now we're just relying on trying to allow our hospitals to manage. They're all running at very close to full capacity, if not over capacity, shifting patients to other parts of the country. So it's really just to try and allow everyone that needs hospital treatment to get the necessary treatment at this point, and then to hope for the vaccine distribution. So that's really, I think, where the emphasis is going to lie.
What do you think? I mean, your book, of course, looks at the challenges facing humanity. There is no greater challenge than the one that we face immediately in terms of the pandemic. It's also highlighted a number of the other challenges that we face. But what do you think the pandemic has taught the world?
Well, I hope it's taught us about our interconnectivity. I've been predicting that a pandemic was inevitable since 2013, my book, The Butterfly Defect, that it would happen and lead to the next financial crisis. It is inevitable because globalization doesn't only spread wonderful things that allow countries and people to prosper, us to have this call, but it also, of course, spreads very bad things. And unless we regulate and manage it more effectively, the super spreaders of the goods, like airport hubs, become the super spreaders of the bads, like pandemics, just like financial centers, lead to cascading financial crises. Cyber systems lead to incredible internet connectivity, but also to cyber viruses. So we need to manage it more effectively. And what the book really aims to do is lay this out in a graphical form, having done many books which have explained this without, I think, reaching a wider public. What we're hoping with this book is that by using maps, we can display this connectivity and the way that the world's changed in a graphic way, which I hope is very appealing to audiences.
Indeed, there's two maps that are juxtaposed that show some of the trade connections and how they've grown in recent decades. And they're very visual representations of our interconnectedness, aren't they?
Absolutely. And Australians will know, because Australians have been such a beneficiary of globalization, how important this is and how fundamentally it's changed over the last 30 years or so. Obviously, the rise of Asian markets, not least China, but also new types of trade in services, tourism, students, many, many other things, traveling. And what the book shows is just how quickly this has transformed. And we also graphically show how it's impacted on the environment, on cities and so on. Of course, Australia knows well. We've got a lot of images of the Australian bushfires and the impact of climate change. And that's, of course, some of the spillover impact.
And I wanted to ask you about the environment, but I wonder whether the pandemic has actually changed globalisation forever. Certainly in this country, we talk about beefing up our own supply chain sovereignty. Will we see countries trying to become less interconnected? We saw what happened at the beginning of the pandemic when everyone was out for themselves in terms of getting, you know, protective equipment and ventilators and that sort of thing. Do you think that it will change things?
I think there is that desire for more independence, but in practice what's happened is we've become much more interdependent because of this pandemic. You know, Australia is desperately in need of vaccines from coming from other places, and that's true of all countries around the world. PPE equipment, etc. In fact, if you look at the prices for containers and so on, it's at a peak at the moment because of all the shipment. So trade in medical equipment, clearly. The whole vaccine development, of course, is a celebration of global collaboration of science. And that's been quite remarkable how that's accelerated. Just the fact we have vaccines within a year is a tremendously positive aspect of globalization. Other dimensions were slowing anyway. I think supply chains were transforming dramatically, mainly because of technological shifts, because of consumer shifts. We want immediate delivery, so we need suppliers that are nearer by. And, of course, other dimensions like finance have shifted. I think we'll see a big increase in many dimensions. We're seeing it in internet traffic, double what it was a year ago, not these Zoom calls and all sorts of other connections. We're seeing it in health, and we'll see it in finance as well, because there's going to be a massive need for financial transfers to support the 100 and more countries that are going to become bankrupt because of this. And, of course, because all assets are being repriced. Where is doing well and where is doing badly is changing, and that's going to lead to new investment trends. So I think in aggregate, it's not going to lead to deglobalization. It's going to accelerate the shifts that were underlying. And I hope what it accelerates to is the thing that's been lacking, which is the failure of politics to globalize. The reason we have a pandemic is our total failure to manage health globally, failure to support the World Health Organization and other organizations. And that's really what the part of globalization that needs reinforcing desperately, urgently.
You're listening to Ian Golden. He's the co-author of Terra Incognita, 100 Maps to Survive the Next 100 Years. And Ian Golden, talking about the failure of our political leaders, that's really the fundamental lesson, isn't it, that we can't keep ignoring the warnings, whatever the challenges of all the great pressing issues that face humanity. Are there any that we can't foresee?
There are plenty that we can't foresee because of the pace of change, but they can all be managed if we work together. And I think, you know, whether it's climate change or whether it's pandemics, whether it's managing the cyber threats or whether it's managing nuclear threats, whatever the threats are, they can be managed if countries work together. We've seen with the development of the vaccine, we've seen in many other spheres how when people come together, they can find solutions. But we need the political will to do that, and we need to put money behind the political will. The fact that the World Health Organization has a smaller budget than a major hospital in Australia or in the UK, I think is testimony to the fact that we haven't got our proportions right. We also tend to look backwards, I think, rather than forwards. So the chance of a pandemic killing us is 1,000 times greater than a chance of a military conflict killing us. And yet we invest thousands of times more in military preparedness than pandemic preparedness. And so we sort of use the rearview mirror to define our future threats, when what we should really be doing is looking forward. And politicians and short-termism is, of course, part of the reason for that.
But when you talk about things like the funding of the WHO and not having our proportions right, is that not also a reflection in a lack of faith in the abilities of the WHO to tackle the problems? I mean, do you see financial support as directly linked to ability? So if they had more money, they'd do a better job? Or do you think one of the problems is that our global institutions have become politicised to the point that effectiveness is questioned?
Well, they have been allowed to wither. They've been allowed to be captured. They've been allowed to become ineffective. But we must remember that we own them. You know, Australia, Britain, the US, we are the shareholders of these institutions. They're not someone else's, they're ours, and we have to make them work. They're the only chance we have. Either we have to reform them, close them, create new ones, but we have to create a global coordination. Not everything requires global coordination. You know, finance, probably 10 countries could manage global finance going forward, but pandemics are unique because they can come from absolutely anywhere on earth, and that means they need all countries to be part of the solution. So WHO, far from perfect, but it's the best we have, And resources shouldn't be thrown at bad things. But what it needs is the will of countries to come together to fix it, to overcome its difficulties. And it's absolutely dramatic with pandemics, but also with climate change, that no country really has an interest in not making this work. So I believe that, yes, there are major problems with the institutions, but we shouldn't allow that, and we cannot allow that to get in the way of fixing them and funding them appropriately.
Well, indeed, as you say, we all own it, and you do right. We are alive at a crossroads for humanity. We are not condemned to a race to the bottom. Essentially, the message is one of optimism, isn't it? That we do have the power to meet the challenges.
Yes. Rob, my co-author and I are very optimistic, because what the maps show in so many ways is how we have met challenges. And there are plenty of examples of different places that have overcome these challenges. So we have the wherewithal. I think it's really a question of deciding that this is in all of our interest, that we need to do it. And in the end, it comes down to voters voting for politicians who will focus on these big picture, long-term issues that concern us all, as well as, of course, overcoming the things at home that matter dramatically, like moving to the carbon transition, like overcoming inequality, creating livable cities, and so on.
But we can do more than just rely on governments, can't we? I mean, to what extent do you see individuals as having a role to play beyond how they vote?
No, that's absolutely right. And the book is full of examples, and not least at city level, of cities that have absolutely transformed the environment, of businesses which can make a dramatic difference. And so everyone in different spheres has a role to play. And depending what the problem is, we can make a bigger or lesser difference. Clearly, business has a major role to play, not only in finding solutions for health challenges, but also climate and many, many others. So we all need to work together on this. And it's really that articulation between the different levels, from communities to cities, states, national, global, and regional, of course, that requires a focus. But one thing we cannot do is to assume that business as normal will get us there, or in the case of the pandemic, that this will only happen every 100 years or so. Unless we actively commit to solve the problems, they'll get worse, and that's because we're in this very unstable global environment.
Ian Golden, how different is the book that you ended up writing from the book that you maybe planned prior to the pandemic?
Well, that's always a great question, particularly at this time of rapid change. This book's been a sort of two-year endeavor, and the pandemic came along in the last 6 months of it. So what we were really doing is playing catch-up. But as I think all of us know, having looked at the maps of how the pandemic spread, it really has highlighted the importance of visualizations and our understanding of connectivity. Many of us had never heard of Wuhan. Many of us had never known about the level of connectivity prior to the pandemic. And I think it's highlighted the questions we raised. So it was a very intense period between January and June when we finished the book, trying to catch up with the pandemic. And of course, it keeps changing. But it is much more focused on connectivity, and I think both on the problem-solving side and the role of different players, as a result of our optimism that this can be dealt with.
Yeah, and we need to stop our focus on short-termism, our biggest weak point.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Not a new argument, but let's hope it's one that starts to be heard.
Well, I hope the book, yes, and I hope that, you know, the purpose of the book is to make a compelling case and show people that read it, that this has been done before, it can be done, and give a very clear visualization of what needs to be done.
Ian Golden, thank you so much for your time, and we hope that you stay well in the UK.
Thank you so much, and good health to all of you.